This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Merrill. Merrill exists to give you all you really need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail. They believe the trail is for everybody and everybody. Merrill's goal is to provide thoughtfully designed, rigorously tested products that over-deliver on performance, versatility, and durability. Because when you've got air in your lungs and good shoes on your feet, you've got everything you need. My first pair of Merrells were trail runners that I bought to explore the old rail beds of New Hampshire that have been turned into bike paths. I've since worn them on forest beds and even up the occasional mountain when I don't need the extra ankle support. I also got to recently test the Ontario waterproof mid-hiking boots, which rise a little higher but have the lightness and flexibility of a trail runner. I'm excited to take them up the White Mountains this summer for overnights and everything in between. Stay tuned for more stories with Merrill this spring and summer. And to learn more in the meantime, visit Merrill.com. That's Merrell.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
We did something different on the mountain, and I know a lot of women express like never ever seeing themselves in this kind of environment, you know, and you don't really, you think about it, but then you're like, oh, we're going, it'll be great. And then you get there and you're like, whoa. Me personally, like on day two, I had a total breakdown because I really didn't think I could do it. Like, and I was like, oh, but I am here and I'm doing it. And I can't believe I doubted myself. Like I had no idea, you know, and lots of women talked about how the trip made them feel like they were now more capable to go back home and go outside.
This is Deandra Oliver, one member of the Curvy Killy crew, a group of 20 plus-size women who on International Women's Day in March hiked Mount Kilimanjaro, the highest mountain in Africa. I was lucky enough to catch up with Deandra before she left. I first learned of the Curvy Killy crew when Deandra submitted a voice memo for our episode on Looking Forward back in December.
This fall, I simulated Kilimanjaro in Vancouver and the area and have been working steadily on training to get ready. And now that I'm moving, have planned a few like long snowshoe trips with a parent up north to prepare. And I leave Vancouver on February 27th to head to Tanzania. And I'm like so terrified of putting my body through what I did again with the simulation, but like with the altitude. But also I'm like so excited to be part of A, the Curvy Killy crew, but also to like support each other to take space on the side of the mountain, but also like in an industry that doesn't know how yet to receive us.
For a year or so leading up to the trip, the women connected and supported each other through a Facebook group. They all had their reasons for climbing the mountain, but I was curious whether the main goal was summiting.
Yeah, I think so for everybody. I know that they've picked, like, not, I don't want to say easier, but they've picked a route that makes acclimatizing easier, and so they have a higher success rate for summiting, because the reason most people don't summit Mount Kilimanjaro, I'm told, is because of the acclimatization, because you're hiking to like over 5,000 meters, like almost 6,000 meters or something. And so, yeah, summiting is the goal, but we've talked a lot about not summiting. It just happens. Some people aren't going to summit. That's how these numbers go and how the experience goes. And I think like for me, there's a lot of responsibility to like achieving it as a goal. And I feel a bit of pressure because we're all fat women. I feel a bit of like societal pressure to do it, I think, because there's so much fat phobia around fat people moving their bodies and not achieving it. And if you don't like lose weight or win that marathon, you're like a failure because your body is a failure. And I think like I feel more pressure to summit to like prove the point that like fat people can do things that you think they can't. Mm. But personally, I'm like, yeah, whatever, it'll be fine, you know? Like, I won't feel like I let myself down. I'll feel like I lived up to some story about how I'm supposed to be because of the way my body is. And I think a lot of people on this hike want to tell that story differently and see this hike and our action together as a retelling of what fat bodies can do, especially in mountaineering and outdoor sports.
Mm-hmm. it's just interesting hearing you say that one of the biggest reasons people don't summit is because of acclimatizing. And that has, I'm assuming that has nothing to do with one's body size.
Totally. And like, I have asthma.
So, yeah.
And that's not because I'm fat. Like I have, you know, and so, and that will even probably not be a problem for me. Like, I think everybody's body, again, everybody's bodies are so different. And so when it comes to acclimatizing, who knows? Like some people that are really fit, just like, and maybe be super thin, and people are like, oh, that person can do anything. The acclimatization still sucks for them.
Mm.
There's so much working against anybody that tries to go up Kilimanjaro, but there's an expectation that because we have fat bodies, that's what's against us.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
So, no, you know, it makes sense, and it sucks that it makes sense, right?
Yeah, totally. Like logically, that makes sense, but it's garbage. Yeah.
It's pretty fun to think of all these women around North America and in other parts of the world training and supporting each other on the same goal. And I'm not alone in thinking that. Their story over time gained traction. A documentary crew came to document the experience, and Glamour magazine profiled them, a story of moms, cancer survivors, and triathletes choosing to climb one of the seven summits. And unlike what we normally see in glossy magazines, the story isn't one of dieting or weight loss. It's one of doing, and one that unfolded over time on the mountain. Deandra had to leave her family for 4 weeks to climb Kilimanjaro and traveled 28 hours from her home in British Columbia to get there. Between training and the time and the financial investment, it was a lot to take on, physically and emotionally. We chatted a couple times before she left, and I'd asked if there was a big why behind the trip. If there was anyone she was doing the hike for. I tried one more time. Is there anyone that you're hiking for? Is there like a, I know you were thinking that there wasn't a really big why when yeah. we talked last, but totally. Like who kind of comes to mind when you think about why you're hiking this mountain and who you might be hiking it for?
Totally. I've been thinking about that question a lot since you asked me that last time. And I've been thinking that I'm definitely hiking this for myself. This saying yes to this trip has been so incredibly healing for my own heart and the way I think about my body and what it can do. It's also been such an amazing, what do I want to say? Like, I feel like watching the face of doubt, like watching the face of people who think I can't do things outside shift is worth all the money in the world. Because it makes, I know looking at their faces that they're going to see other fat people outside and know that I did that and think that they can do that too, you know, and that's really important. I'm crying. And then, sorry. The other thing that I think is really cool, and I was talking with my aunt about this over Christmas, is that like her parents came to Canada as refugees in the 60s. And we've been talking about how, like, you know, my mom had two kids, me and my sister, and then I had one kid. And that is essentially the end of the family line. And so this question has been really interesting because we've been talking about, like, what we do with the lives that our family gave us. And yeah, I've been thinking a lot about my responsibility to take up space and create change in my community and give other people the opportunities that my family gave me, that kind of stuff. So the why is definitely very emotional. And I'm really excited that even if I don't summit, that this trip has like opened up all this stuff for me and like has changed my own practice in the community, because I do a ton of community organizing and it's really changed my intention about being in community and creating an opening space for people or facilitating space or even just giving cash to people to create their own space to do these kinds of things. So the why has definitely, has not been an easy answer for me, obviously, but I've definitely moved beyond the, like, I'm fat and I can do things because my body can do them. And like screw society and screw patriarchy, I've definitely like moved beyond a lot of my anger around being excluded, which is an ongoing process, trying to buy gear for this trip, you know? And so like, how do I move beyond my own feelings of exclusion and frustration into like a more open and generative intention, I guess? I've been reading lots of Adrienne Marie Brown. She wrote a book called Emergent Strategy, and it blew my life apart in lots of great ways. And so I'm working on some of the things she challenges people who read her book to do in their communities.
I've never heard of that book. I'll have to check it out.
It's fantastic.
Oh, well, it does make sense to me, and it's very beautiful, thinking about you talking about making the most of your life and your family line, and basically encouraging others to do that too by doing this, opening up the possibilities for how other people see themselves and what they can do with their bodies. Deandra brought a recorder with her on the trip, and I'm super grateful that she trusted us with their story. It turns out climbing a mountain can be pretty darn noisy, so bear with us the varying audio quality.
When skinny people have no idea, and they have so many negative stereotypes, and we're ready for them at any moment. And oftentimes we think people are having them, sometimes they actually aren't having them.
Yeah. The one big reason that I agreed to do this is because it was going to be with people who are like me, could identify with being in this body, and trying and wanting to do things, even if not always able to do it with everyone else, you know, at the same pace.
It's the only reason why I chose to do this, is because it was with other fat women.
That was two hikers, Eve and Shaz. Here's Deandra.
It was so amazing. Like, I got off an overnight plane to Amsterdam and got Wi-Fi in the airport, and I get all these messages like, we're over here, and like naming the gate and a coffee shop. And it was just like following these instructions, exhausted through the airport, and then showing up. And then all these people I know deeply on the internet were sitting there drinking coffee. And it was just so nice to see all their faces in like the flesh in human form. And Deb Malkin and I have become really close over the last few months because we're working on a memoir about our trip together. And it was so nice to see her right away. And then we ran into more people. And so it was like there was 9 of us, I think, on our flight to Kilimanjaro. Felt like we were on a group trip finally, because I'd been training on my own and felt like so much of what I was doing was an individual pursuit. So it was so great to have that like body energy together. And then we got to the hotel pretty late, but it was the next morning, like running into more people at the breakfast. And then that day it was a lot of, meeting people or like, what room are you in? Texting people you hadn't met yet, that kind of stuff. And a lot of us brought gear for each other. So there was a day of switching gear around. Something that was really exciting for me was that I got to meet Shaz in her human form. She's a woman from Nairobi that asked about the trip, and we brought her on and we sponsored for her to climb with us. And she's a fat activist and blogger from Nairobi. And I was so excited to meet her. Like, we'd message a little bit on Instagram, and the kinship between her and myself and then another woman named Claudia was like so intense and so great. And it was so nice to have that kind of friendship and kinship in place unexpectedly. Kilimanjaro.
What was it like meeting your guides for the trip?
It was so cool. We met at the welcome dinner. There's two head guides, Abu and Andrew. And Abu, their company is called Trek to Kili. And Trek to Kili is part of K-pop, which is like a, I would say unionized. It's like an association of organized porters and guides on the mountain. And they pay higher wages. You end up having more guides and porters because there's like a restricted weight limit that they can carry. And then they've been hiring more women guides and porters, which has been really great. And so anyway, the welcome dinner, Abu was saying like, we are your family, like Trek to Kili is your family and everybody here is your family and we're going to take care of you. And I felt really like I had no right to claim these people I didn't know as my family. And that I was on a trip and we had hired them and we were paying them. And I have all these issues around colonization I'm working through. So when he said that, I was like, whoa, that's a lot for me, right? Definitely over the first 3 days, it like they became our family. It was, I've never experienced that before. And the women porters, Eve talks about that in her interview.
Here's Eve.
They're like climbing, they do this for a living. They climb up and down the mountain with 33 pounds of stuff on their backs or their necks or their heads. Plus their stuff. It just seems like, and I'm doing this once in my lifetime, so I just feel deep respect for them.
I was really blown away by their kinship.
Throughout the trip, like, we got to see the women porters quite regularly, and there were a number of them that we built the closest kinships you can on this kind of excursion.
We'll hit the trail with the Curvy Kili crew after this. You've probably heard me talk about Third Love bras on the podcast before, and I want to take this ad spot to talk about their size inclusivity. As of this February, Third Love officially has 78 bra sizes, with bands ranging from 30 inches to 48 inches, and cups AA through I, in their 5 most loved styles. That's one of the largest ranges in the industry, which is pretty cool if you have boobs. It's nice to know that odds are higher that you'll be able to find your size, and that it'll be cute too. Also, while other brands charge more based on sizing, at Third Love, bras cost the same no matter the size. Same comfort, same perfect fit, same fabric, same style, same price, no matter the size. And you order online, no chilly dressing room. Every customer has 60 days to put it to the test, wash it, wear it, and if you don't love it, you can return it, and then Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off their first order. Go to thirdlove.com/explore now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/explore for 15% off today. This episode of She Explores is also brought to you by Greener Ways Organic. I don't know about you, but it's getting to be mosquito season where I live, and when I'm outside on trail runs or hikes, I definitely prefer to use as natural products as possible, especially with my sensitive skin. Greener Ways Organic makes organic, essential oil-based insect repellents and cleaners. They have a great backstory, too. Greener Ways Organic was founded by a mom, Jamie Bella, back in 2008 when she was pregnant and had an insect infestation in her house. Jamie was so frustrated by not being able to pronounce ingredients that she started her own DEET and chemical-free line. And even though it sounds fancy, she made it affordable and accessible to other families. It's now USDA-certified organic and available all over, places like your local CVS pharmacy and Costco, and online via greenerways.com and Amazon. Give yourself peace of mind when you're spending time outside. Greener Ways Organic is safe for use with children, pets, and adults. I've gotten to test some out, and it smells great, too. You can find GreenerWays Organic online. Just search GreenerWays Organic on Amazon. That's GreenerWays Organic. Choose the greener way. We're back.
At the welcome dinner, and I guess the Woe Travel does this at all their welcome dinners, but they go through their whys, and everybody introduces themselves and says where they're from, and then says their whys, why they're there. And it was so beautiful and devastating at the same time, because every single woman talked about how, like, the stuff that fat women experience in their bodies, the things they experience in outdoor culture. Women talked about depression and anxiety and eating disorders and weight loss and weight gain and all the reasons why they were, all the things they were trying to overcome just to be there, and how this trip was like a way to overcome a lot of those things. A few women in the group had lost people in their families, and so this trip was like a way to like take back their lives in honor of those people. Some women had overcome cancer and were like, well, what else? Like, this is what I have to, like, I'm living my life now, you know? And what was so, everybody cried for like an hour and a half. But what was so cool was that because we all have multiple identities, but the one shared identity of being a fat person, like, a lot of people resonated with a lot of people's other whys. And so it was so cool to be able to like share your percentage of that experience rather than everybody having to unload all of the trauma of being having a diverse body outside. And so like we could all share a part of that experience, even though knowing that it was a similar experience for many people.
And that's one of the reasons, and we'll get to more of this, but that it was a collective summiting.
It was definitely like a shared experience. Like everything one person did was everybody's experience. Everybody was checking in with each other. A lot of pep talks, a lot of support. There was one woman who decided on day three that she didn't want to keep going. So she left the trip, and there was so much support around her getting to day three. It was just like so cool to share all of our successes and all of the things that challenge us together. So Deb, last April, she hurt her knee at a mobility workshop. So there's something when you're fat and you learn how to long jump, and I say this from my own experience, that is so liberating. She says she was having a really great time long jumping and just jumped a little too much and really hurt her knee. She didn't realize till a few days later. But then since then had gotten done a lot of rehabilitation. She got stem cells put into her knee. She just done all this stuff, but that meant she couldn't hike or train at all. And so she hadn't hiked in months until that first day. And I'm so proud of her to witness her take care of her body in such an intentional way, and to not give in to her desire to go hiking to train, like the anxiety of not being ready. Like she just went with it. And I'm so proud of her for doing that. And I'm so honored to have shown up to the camp with her on day one. Oh my gosh. And she just cried because she felt like day one, and I didn't know this till that moment, but she felt like getting through day one meant she could get through the trip. And so for her, day one was it.
Camp!
Oh my God.
Are you good? You did it, Deb! Oh, I love you. So proud of you.
Good job.
Even though we talked about the whys and we got to know each other, like, we didn't see everybody's unfolding before the trip happened, right? Like, as the trip progressed, people came apart in different ways and came back together.
And it was, I didn't get to witness everybody's because there's so many of us, but it was so, it was such like a humbling and honoring feeling to witness people work through their shit.
Yeah.
And to feel safe enough to do that in a group of people on the side of a mountain.
Time to wake up.
Yeah, wait.
Good morning. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Time to wake up. Hello.
My legs are still warming. I was blown away by the land, and I didn't realize till I got there how I was so focused on having the right gear and getting all the training in and like being ready individually for being there, that I completely forgot that we would be walking on this beautiful landscape. Like, it was so overwhelming for me to see all these plants and see so many familiar plants and to walk on landscapes that looked like a little bit like the land I walk on here in British Columbia, especially on the coast. But then as we kept getting higher and higher, that land, all of a sudden there'd be these mossy rocks with succulents on them, you know, or like pine trees and sagebrush. And these like just immaculate and diverse landscapes. It was so overwhelming and so beautiful.
Go for it.
Okay, so now we have another species. As I told you, we have Erica arborea. It's the most species that found on this area. And also we have everlasting flowers. Yeah, so we have about 6 different species of everlasting flowers. So this is the first one you can see today. We call it Helichrysum splendidum. Yeah, Helichrysum splendidum. Yeah, and also I was just talking about a species that's good for stomach problems. Yeah, so it's here. Yeah, so this, we call it African wormwood. It's a little bit bitter. You can just
test it. Yeah, I can try it?
Yeah, I can try it.
That was all unexpected. I didn't expect to learn these things about the land or be around people that were so willing to share that knowledge and that experience with us. And it was really great.
Okay, can you say, I'm gonna put this here. Can you say your name and where you're from?
My name is Autumn Stofflett. I'm originally from a very tiny town in Wisconsin, United States.
Awesome. Can you talk a little bit about the first few days of the climb and the land that we kind of walked through, and if anything like reminded you of home or anything stuck out for you?
The first few days were awesome. Like, I feel like we all felt like really strong and just like really cohesive team the first few days. Everything was very different from home, and I think that's what made it much more exciting. Like, being in Wisconsin, it's like pine trees and maple trees and all that kind of stuff. So, but starting in the rainforest and just kind of moving through the different climate zones and moving through like the different terrain was really cool. And that made the hike, I don't know, so much more interesting, because there's so much different stuff around you each day. Every day is different.
Do you feel like, I know you and I hiked up that the day of the summit night together.
Yeah.
The goat pack, and I'm like, do you feel like something shifted that day? Like on that hike? Or, just curious.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I feel like everything's kind of a blur right now.
Sure.
Trying to remember each day. What was each day?
Because we hoofed it, remember? From the third cave, you, me,
yeah.
Molly, Karen.
Yeah, Matthew. We did. I felt really strong that day, and I just felt like we were all really strong and just, like, ready to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it was just a really good, solid day.
So cool.
But if we hadn't gone the pace that they were giving us, I don't think I could have made it through a lot of those days. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, Yeah.
I've never hiked that slow, but I've also never felt that strong hiking either. So that was pretty amazing.
For sure.
When you do a group activity, you know, sometimes you find people that, I don't know, that you have deeper relationships with. And we were joking because we spent the whole week together on the mountain and we constantly checked in with each other and gave each other pep talks. And like at one point, Shaz took the recorder away from me for a few days, for example. Yeah, but I thought it was like so cool to have these connections with these women. I was not expecting that. I personally find group dynamics really challenging. And I know a lot of diverse folks find group activities and outdoor culture super intimidating. And so to like feel like you're accepted no matter what, and your body is okay, and your pace is your pace, and your politics are cool, and there's a bunch of queeros on the trip. And so it's like, to know that that's a safe space already definitely made the hurdle of getting to know each other and being outside and all that stuff a lot easier.
You heard it right. Shaz, the Kenyan stand-up comedian, stole the recorder, and her diary entries provide a wonderful insight into how the women were feeling on the hike.
She talks a lot in those diaries and processes a lot in ways that I would never have the confidence to do. And I had no idea until the other day that she had done that. And I'm so grateful she did that.
Today's acclimatization climb was pretty good. I feel good about it. Although I have waves of nausea. I don't know what that's about. Every time I bend. Like, I really want to go into the tent, but that includes bending. And I don't think I can handle that right now.
I can do
purchasing things. I feel awful.
And then I do all the refunds because it's like...
I don't know how we have dinner in like half an hour. I've just had lunch. It's too much food. Too much.
Shimboni. Yaani kwamba uko poa?
Eh.
Naona shinoro.
Shinoro.
Yaani kama mtu akapiga mambo mwambie poa.
Poa.
Mzima.
Mzima. Shinoro. Eh, asante.
Aya bwana.
Something new. Yeah. I like that they're teaching me their own dialects. Okay. I don't want to do this, but I need to have some Dymox and some prunes so that I can have a decent night. That's the plan. Oh, I so need a foot massage. What does a girl have to do for a decent foot massage? Oh, the sun is coming out. Oh, thank you. Sun. Okay. Got that back.
By the time we got above the tree line, it was literally like a rock, a scree slope everywhere you looked. And so many false ridges. Those kinds of things. It was like rolling ridges. And it was so beautiful, but we're so exposed. So I would be like, oh, I love it. It's so beautiful. And then I'd be like, oh, but it's killing me.
No, I keep saying root, but like, yeah. In 2 days, it's like, you won't have the oxygen. You have to make oxygen choices.
Did you get a chance to fall into a groove, or was each day very different?
No, I would say I didn't. Mostly because the terrain changed so much in the first 3 days. And then on the acclimatization, we had an acclimatization day. We went on a short hike, but I was feeling so sick at that point. But I will say that by the end of day five, so the morning started out really terribly, but by the end of day five, when we were getting to this the base camp, I felt like my body was really strong and my symptoms weren't so bad. And I was like super excited to go to the summit. So those last few hours felt really great. But then getting to 4,700 meters, I think it's like 15,000 feet. Oh. It just hit me and I didn't have enough time to acclimatize before I could make the decision to go for the summit.
Hey. This is Shaz. It's our last full night of sleep, because tomorrow night, after we get to the base camp, we'll only sleep till midnight, and then that's it. So, I'm here doing my final bit of self-care. I kind of like that I have the tent to myself while Allison goes off to have her meetings, and I can be a bit messy, and I can massage. And get naked-ish and massage myself and show myself some love, especially my legs, my feet, my knees, because I need it. I really do. Today wasn't so rough, but I was really surprised that coming down was not as easy as I hoped it would be. But I think also, once we summit, I don't care how hard it's going to be, because I will have summited. And that's my goal for tomorrow night. So I just want to show myself all the extra love. Love on my body. Massage. Myself. My knees. My shin. It's also a really nice time to just sit and think about it. I seem to have decent oxygen levels. I know some of the crew didn't have great oxygen levels last night, and that can be a cause for concern. I really want to ask Deandra about her levels, but I also don't want to ask, because I feel like sometimes you just need to let people process whatever they're going through before you ask them about it. That's how I feel about some of my things, just even in everyday life. Sometimes there's so much pressure to sit and talk about how are you feeling, how are you feeling about this, what are you going to do about that. And sometimes you just don't know. You just need to sit in your feelings for a while. Maybe that's what I need to do. So, if the conversation happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, that's fine as well. I don't want to add to my own anxiety, or anyone else's for that matter, on such a crucial night. On the upside, at least all the nausea paid off and I threw up once. And I'm surprised that's an upside, but I feel so much better now. Self-care is such hard but necessary work.
As Deandra and I talked about before she left, acclimatization is one of the most challenging and unpredictable elements of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. Another challenge? Stomach bugs, resulting in diarrhea, vomiting, and dehydration. Many of the Curvy Killy crew experienced difficulties with both acclimatization and stomach issues. On the night of the summit push, Deandra and three others decided not to attempt the 19,341-foot summit.
So one person had hurt her knee on day two, and I am so proud of her for not being like, I'm out of here. There was a bunch of nurses and it's so funny, lots of nurses and healthcare kind of practitioners on our trip. And so anytime anybody was injured, somebody had a thing to make it better. And so she got her knee wrapped and I saw her zone in to herself and just like push through days of pain and then all the emotional parts that come with that. And she's decided not to go. She was the reason I probably didn't go, because I heard her say, as they were waking everybody up, I heard her say, I just got to blow my air mattress up and go back to sleep. And I was like, oh, good idea. You know, I was like, I'm going to do this too. So, and then another woman had really bad puking and pooping experiences on the way up to the base camp. So she stayed, and then another woman stayed, but I didn't get to check in with her about how she was doing. And then everybody else attempted, I think.
Yeah.
And then some of them came back right away. Like right away, I mean like within a half an hour. And then others, they came in throughout the night.
On top of the high altitude, the conditions were no joke.
It was like gale force winds and people were hiking into it. And so like the four of us that went to sleep, you know, we went to sleep, and even though you have 70 pounds of duffels and your body, like at least one body, it still felt like your tent was going to fly away. Like it was so windy. And in the morning you wake up and it was like everything had completely gone sideways. People were walking around in a daze. Somebody was having an acute altitude sickness reaction and was getting like put on a stretcher to get run down the mountain. One of the head guides was sitting in the mess tent, just like exhausted, because none of the guides slept because they all attempted with everybody, just like so gobsmacked. And I was like, what happened? And he just was like, the wind.
Wow.
So it's just like unexpected windy conditions. So people would walk for like 3 hours and then find out how far they actually were on the summit and hear that they had gone not far at all. And so because it was taking a long time because of the wind, a lot of people had to turn around because there's no oxygen up there. And, it was really disappointing for a number of people. But a lot of people also were like, no, this is as far as we're going to get today. And some were able to wait for the sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
And watch the sunrise from their little rock, or there was a cave partway up. Some people waited at the cave for the sunrise, you know?
That sounds nice.
Yeah, it sounded really nice. And we had lots of talks that morning and the night before in the tent about going as a group and how we're here. Part of the trip was like challenging so many things about outdoor culture, and like unexpectedly we got to work through our own feelings around peak bagging, you know, and something, and then also like talk about what it meant for people to choose not to put their lives at risk or their illnesses at risk to keep going, and how as like a team, if we were talking about how like in a marathon, if a few people from your team make it, your team makes it. And so we talked about how for the two women that made it, like they made it for the group in a lot of ways, and how that was a different way to look at summit culture. And then there were lots of jokes from women who didn't go being like, I can't wait to see the pictures of our summit and stuff. So it's like a really nice, but I know a lot of people were working through like disappointment for sure.
Kathy and Autumn represented the Curvy Killy crew on top of Mount Kilimanjaro. Deandra had the opportunity to talk with Autumn about it.
I mean, you're in the dark, so there's so much unknown, which was helpful, actually, by the end of it. Like, if I had seen that trail ahead of time, I don't know if I could have gotten up it.
Yes.
Like, seeing what was ahead of me
for sure
would have been intense.
Yeah.
but you're just like, I'm just watching my guide's feet in front of me and following his feet.
Yeah.
And just like step by step, like you don't know where you are or which direction you're going in.
Yeah.
So it's pretty intense
because
you just can't see anything around you.
You're like zoned. Do you feel like zoned in?
Yeah, kind of like just like watching my guide's feet and just kind of like getting in the pace and just keep on going.
So cool.
Yeah.
What was the trail like? What did it feel like?
It wasn't, I don't know. I mean, for so much of it, it was just like that loose gravel, but you're just going back and forth on just like these little paths the whole way. And it's just kind of like not even thinking about it, just kind of going back and forth. Yeah. So.
When the sun came up, how much farther did you feel like you had to go?
Oh, forever.
Yeah.
Once the sun came up and you could see where you were going, it felt like forever. But actually, so when it was still dark, I was at a point where I was like, I just don't want to do this anymore. And Henna, our camera lady, was like, let's just wait till the sun comes up and we'll reassess.
Yeah.
Like, she was my cheerleader the whole time. And as soon as the sun came up, it was so beautiful. And even though I knew I had so much further to go at that point, it was just kind of like a new little burst of energy to like keep moving because it was so pretty.
Yeah.
Like, the day was just like clear and perfect. So.
Yeah. What did it feel like to climb up over the last few rocks?
It was tough. Like, you know it's right there, but the rocks just seem 10 times bigger than they were at that point. I mean, the whole last hour to 45 minutes was, like, rocks and a little bit of scrambling, and, like, you know it's right there. So, like, right before I got up there, I probably had, like, 5 minutes left, and I was like, I just need a break. I know I only have 5 more minutes left, but I just need a break. But knowing that sign was, like, you don't see the sign until it's right there.
Oh, wow.
Like, okay. You cannot see it until you come, like, around these rocks, and it's right in front of you.
Yeah.
So knowing it was right up there, I was like, I can do this. I can keep moving. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What did it feel like?
Getting up there?
Yeah. Like, accomplishing the thing.
It was just, like, relief.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, when they were filming me, I was like, I don't know if they were expecting me to, like, cry or cheer, but I literally sat down and just closed my eyes and just breathed. And it was just like, I made it.
Yeah.
Like, I did it.
Yeah.
So
proud of
you. It was cool. It was tough.
I know, like, I didn't go for it, and I don't feel disappointed or anything. And I know a lot of people are having mixed feelings, and a lot of people are really proud of you and Kathy for, like, going for it. And, like, I know it'll take a long time to process.
Yeah.
Kind of that, and we talked a lot about how, like because we're a team, it wasn't an individual pursuit, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, just wondering, like, how you might be feeling or working through some of that stuff, or...
I don't know if it's completely hit me yet. I think it's just been such an exhausting week that I don't know if I've fully, like, processed.
Yeah.
I think slowly but surely it's kind of, like, hitting me that I did it. But I feel like... we did it for each other, and I was so proud of all of us for getting to Kibo, and, like, everybody just felt, so many people felt terrible, but they were still there and still cheering everybody on, but the whole time it was, like, a team effort, and it was, like, it wasn't about the summit, it was about us just getting on that mountain and doing it together.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit more about that feeling of if just one of you had summited, the feeling that your group had summited.
Yeah, so when we woke up in the morning, there's no, like, walkie-talkies, you know? Like, so we had no idea how the people that weren't back at camp, how they were doing. We had no idea, and so it was, like, such a hopeful feeling to think that they were still going for it, that they made it high enough. That they were still going for it, you know, before the sun came up. Because I think you had to get to a certain point before the sun came up to be able to keep going. And that they still had the energy. And so we talked a lot about how it was so, we were all so hopeful, you know, that at least some people from the group were going to make it. And talked a lot about, like, one of the guides from Woe Travel talked a lot about, like, achieving your own personal summit, and that a sign isn't a summit. You know, and the moment you decide to wait and stop and turn around and reconsider, that can also be a summit. And that really made me think a lot about how in mountaineering culture, people go on trips like this just to summit, just to say they summit. But in my own personal network of many different kinds of bodies, including thin white male outdoor bodies, I don't know a single person that's attempted this and made it. So I'll tell people, well, I went and I didn't summit. And they're like, oh, my buddy John didn't summit either. So I think like a lot of people don't make it, or they try, or they get altitude sickness because the altitude is intense, and don't make it. And I think, and I know you and I talked about it before I went, like the pressure on fat bodies to make it, to prove that fat bodies can make it. And so I know that morning there was a lot of feelings around like, well, if some fat bodies can make it, it means other fat bodies can make it. And maybe one day my own fat body can make it. So there's a lot of hope. But also the way that we built camaraderie and friendship around being on the journey together. One of the women from Woe Travel said that the trip really, like, they say all the time that it's not about the summit, it's about the journey, and their marketing and in their talks and in their pep talks, they say it all the time. But she said, like, it wasn't until this trip that she really understood what that meant. Because it was really about the journey. It was about taking up space. It was around taking up space in media, too. Like, we were in Glamour magazine.
Wow.
Like, and just, like, putting our messages and our diverse bodies into those spaces where that hasn't happened before was really huge and meaningful for a lot of people. There were people on the trails, not on our group, that ran into us that were super excited to see us because they'd been following us on Instagram and their hike was timed at the same time. And I heard an anecdote that one woman was so excited, but being really shy. And her husband was like, just get your picture taken with the Curvy Killer. You know? And so I really like, I feel like a lot of the crew felt like they were inspired, but also could be inspiring, which is so exciting to feel like you have so much working against you. And then to know that you, what you just did means a lot to a lot of people.
And is that the takeaway that you would want for people listening to this story, the way it all unfolded?
I feel like everybody from this group has a lot of their own takeaways and things that they shared. And as we work on the book, and they're making a documentary, so there'll be a movie about it. And I think all of those things will unfold. And I know as I process the trip myself over the next few months and through the writing of the book, there will be more takeaways. But I really feel like a major takeaway for me was like, it's worth the risk. You know, it was worth the financial risk and the time away from my family and all that time training to take on an adventure like this. But there's no way that I could imagine just going in a pair with a friend, or I couldn't imagine going in a group without a bunch of other plus size and fat people. Like, I feel like so much about hiking Mount Kilimanjaro for me was doing it in this group of fabulous humans, not about making the trip and doing the summit. Like, there's so much learning about, now I know, like, if you go, take some freeze-dried pico de gallo to rehydrate and put on your food. Like, I know some ways I would handle this kind of trip from a needs standpoint, about what kind of gear I would bring, or how many more baby wipes I should have brought, like all those kinds of things. Like, there's so many practical takeaways, but I really feel like recreating this magic is going to be challenging, but I'm really excited to have the opportunity to try to take up space outdoors in the body I have.
Can we please raise more bottles to the Curvy Killy crew for 7 epic days on one of the 7 summits?
Yes.
And for kicking ass
and taking names. And woo! Keep moving mountains, ladies. You're changing the world with what you're doing.
Woo!
Cheers!
The whole thing, the Curvy Kelly crew, so grateful for them and for having this wistful opportunity to get to be part of their movement and be part of the work they're doing. And I'm really excited to see what each of the members of the crew do together or separately over the next few years.
Today, DeAndra's working on bringing together fat women, non-binary, and femme humans for fat mountaineering courses in North America. You can learn more and sign up for trips in 2020 and 2021 via sinkships.ca. DeAndra also has an adorable new puppy to hike with. You can see it and follow along with DeAndra via her Instagram at sink.ships. All links and resources will be listed in our show notes. Also, something that DeAndra and I talked about more in depth one-on-one was the inability to find hiking and mountaineering gear easily that fit her and the rest of the Curvy Kelly crew. Recently, DeAndra shared a survey from a new company that is specifically going to focus on hiking pants for fat women. If this is something that interests you, I'll link that in the show notes as well. Thank you, thank you, thank you to DeAndra for her time, generosity, and trust. Thank you as well to Deb, Eve, Autumn, and Shaz for sharing their voices and experiences. Thank you to our sponsors, Merrill, Third Love, and Greener Ways. As usual, they're listed on the show notes and via the episode landing page on she-explorers.com. If you enjoy this podcast, there are two easy ways to help support us. First, you can spread the word. You can do it by leaving a review where you listen, like on Apple Podcasts, or by sharing the podcast with a friend. Second, join our podcast Facebook group. This second one's a little bit selfish, but it's super meaningful to me to be able to connect with listeners personally. And I love seeing you all connect with each other and ask each other for outdoor advice and to share in each other's triumphs and challenges. As you might have heard on the podcast, I recently had a few stops on a book tour in the Pacific Northwest, and getting to meet listeners in person, it's so simple to say that it's a reminder for why I make this podcast, but it's true. Like, it was just really incredible to be able to connect one-on-one with people. And the podcast Facebook group is the closest that I come to having that in-person time. Thank you. Music in this episode is by Lee Rosevere, Kay Angle, and Josh Woodward. And all the sound you heard was recorded on Mount Kilimanjaro by DeAndra Oliver. Thank you, DeAndra, again. Until next week, have fun out there.